Ken, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon.
You say that you have never felt so uneasy in a park in your whole life as you did the other day in Memorial Park.
Not only that, but in one of the most beautiful parks I've ever been in. It's an absolute shame. I brought my grandchildren to the War Memorial Gardens 2 Sundays ago to find that it seems to be the in thing to bring your dogs there and leave them run loose.
This is after we heard yesterday of that poor Westie that ended up getting his head swallowed whole by a Staffordshire Bull Terrier.
However, that was the poor Westie who again was off the lead, and the Staffordshire was off the lead. If you go in there, dogs of all breeds are off the leads. My question is there any rules or regulations involved from the OPW as regards walking dogs in that park? Surely they must be under the control of the owners. And secondly,
is there a sign up at the gate, Ken?
There's a sign, but there's no mention of dogs.
At all?
No, I couldn't see it.
Not even about cleaning up after your dog, never mind the lead.
Oh, well, yeah, you have those signs around, right? Mm-hmm. But there's no mention, so I'm just flummoxed. I'm used to dogs, so it's not something, I'm not afraid of dogs. But I had a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old with me. And I was in fear of their safety with the amount of dogs that were loose. I've never seen it anywhere, and I don't understand it.
Well, how many dogs are we talking about, Ken?
Well, you know, at least 20. While I was there, for about an hour and a half, at least 20.
Mm-hmm.
And there was all, they ranged from Bull Mastiff, there was Staff, then there was Chihuahua, you name it, they were all there. But they were all loose.
And presumably they weren't always just minding their own business, they were interacting with each other and...
No, they were interacting with their owners, whereby they have these long sling type things, they throw balls. How you can control a dog who's 100 feet away from is beyond me. So they're playing, they're having the dogs play chase. So if a child, God forbid, or an adult gets in the way, what's going to happen? So first of all, is there a policy regarding dogs in that park? Secondly, if there is a policy, who is actually implementing it? And thirdly, if there isn't a policy, why isn't there?
What's the solution as far as you're concerned?
Dogs should be under the control of the owner. This is a War Memorial Gardens in Island Bridge. You walk to the parkland area to get to the actual memorials. There's a lot of people going into the memorial area, which has the most beautiful gardens. But you have to walk to that area where they're exercising dogs. I don't think dogs should be exercised there at all. And or rent fence the area where they're exercising their dogs. But either way, dogs should be able to control their owners.
Would keeping them on a lead not do the same thing, Ken?
It would, yeah. But that's it. That's keeping a dog under control. It's under the control of the owner, then.
Because all of these wide open spaces, surely dog owners should be entitled to bring their animals there. I mean,
absolutely. They should be able to bring them. However, so should the public be able to bring their kids and be absolutely sure that the children are safe at all times. I can tell you cannot do that in those gardens at the moment.
Sally, you don't think that having a lead makes any difference at all?
Well, it didn't in my case, Philip.
What happened?
I was walking in St. Anne's Park one night with my Cocker Spaniel. And now, it's a good while ago. And there was a couple coming towards me with a pit bull on the lead. And the pit bull was so strong, it broke away from the couple, got my dog's ear. The ear is now, my Cocker's ear is now in the pit bull's mouth. And the young lad had to get the branch of a tree, prise his dog's mouth open to release the ear.
Good Lord.
So having your dog on a lead, having one of those dogs, because they are so strong, the shoulders of them, and the side, like they've mouths like crocodiles.
Was your dog's ear saved?
Oh, it was saved. Oh, thank God it was saved, yes. And when I brought her home, I cut all the fur and swabbed this, it's like stab wounds, and the next morning, this is about 9:30 at night, in a summer's night, so I swabbed the stab wounds, and I brought her to the vet the next morning, and she got an antibiotic injection.
So obviously, the leads did no good in your case, anyway.
No, because the
but this is one of the 11 breeds that should be muzzled.
Yeah, it's on a restrictive list, so it should have been muzzled. Yeah. That's it. So who's policing these things?
Well, the dog wardens go to St. Anne's Park, but they're never there when I see these dogs off the lead there. And I know they're there at lunch hour.
No.
And the couple were, they were very nice about it. And, you know, they couldn't be nicer about it. But, like, they apologised and said it never happened before. But sure, he knew what to do. It must have happened before.
You hardly need a doorbell, Sally, when you have that going on in the background.
I don't need an alarm, Philip.
Indeed.
But I would like to send my best wishes to Molly and her owner, because her owner must be in a terrible state too.
Yes.
The fright you get.
Indeed.
1850 715 815.
Silly slip of the tongue a few minutes ago. Of course, I meant to say poor Ignally. That was a bit of a silly mistake on my part. Excuse me. Rosemary Daly, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Philip.
You want to take me to task?
Well, not necessarily, but I do want to correct something. Yesterday on the programme, Bernadette made an announcement that for everybody's benefit, that the healthiest dog to get is a mutt. Now, I don't know what she meant by a mutt, but if she meant what I think she meant, which is a crossbreed, she may not realise that she's just playing into the hands of puppy farmers in this country. I breed dogs occasionally, but I breed them very ethically, as do many of the people that I know who show their dogs and who love their dogs. I've been running, as you can probably hear. I'm just concerned that Liveline wouldn't put out this perpetual lie that's being perpetrated on the public, that the way to get a healthy dog is to go and buy something that's a crossbreed, because it's not true. Some crossbreeds are healthy, some pedigree dogs are healthy, some pedigree dogs are unhealthy, some crossbreeds are unhealthy. But you have a better chance of finding a healthy dog if you go to a reputable breeder who has taken the time and the effort to keep health records, keep pedigrees, research the dogs they're using, going back generations and generations, test the breeding stock before they use it, rather than go to a puppy farmer.
I think what she was talking about there, because I don't think that the two of you are coming from different directions, or you're not at cross purposes, because she wasn't talking, and I assume you are talking about labradoodles or puggles when you're talking about crossbreeds.
But you said mutts. Now, some of my best friends are mutts, and some of them are even dogs. But to be honest, I just think it's something that's constantly being perpetuated, and people are naive.
But see, the problem is that, I mean, you might be breeding very conscientiously,
and you
might be making absolutely sure that there is no hint of mothers ever being bred with sons or fathers with daughters, in order to keep your gene pool as diverse and as wide as possible. But there are many, many people out there who are not doing that, Rosemary.
You're right, and these are not breeders. These are puppy farmers. I'll give you an example. I met somebody within the last 6 months, a lovely lady, and we got talking, and she happened to mention to me that her son bred dogs. So I was very interested. I said, what does he breed? And she told me what he bred, and then subsequent to that, I met the son, who was a farmer, and he told me that he was breeding Cocker Spaniels crossed with Shih Tzus. And I asked him, why are you breeding those? And he said, because they sell well. And then he said, the age-old one, the one that everybody trots out, and of course they're healthier as well. And I said, how do you know they're healthier? What health checks are you doing? And he looked at me and said, well, I just know they're healthier. So it's a theory, it's a myth, it's not backed up by evidence. And then his mother piped up and she said, Rosemary, said he has to. She said he has three children to put through college.
I know, but Rosemary, undisputably, it is the case, isn't it, that for the people who are breeding quote-unquote pedigrees, but doing it in the same narrow gene pool.
There isn't a narrow gene pool. That's the point.
Why would there be a narrow gene pool? But there would be, because if you have the same family being bred.
That's part of the myth. There is a huge gene pool. I can be on the internet any night of the week, yes, and look at dogs in Germany, look at dogs in France, look at dogs
and,
in
And fair play
Holland,
to you for keeping the gene pool wide, but there, yes, are many people who aren't doing that.
Yes, but they are not breeders. That's my point.
Yeah, and this was the point that Bernadette was trying to make, was that very often you'll end up with a pedigree dog that will have all of the same illnesses perpetuated by virtue of being bred within a very, very narrow pool of dogs.
No, Philip, and by virtue of being bred by a puppy farmer. Example, a young lady came to me for help with training within the last couple of months. She told me on the phone that she had a Bichon Frise. Now, when she arrived, the dog was white. Mm. But it was like a Bichon Frise in the same way as a white giraffe is like a white Ford Focus. It was not a Bichon Frise. She told me when she bought it from the breeder, in inverted commas, she brought it home and that within 24 hours it was in the vets on a drip. It had parvovirus. That person will say...
And that person is breeding in unhygienic circumstances. Okay, but hang on a second.
Farmer.
I mean, if you want to stick to this puppy farmer breeder distinction, there are breeders who have caused the kind of controversies that we have seen leading
allegedly
to the BBC.
Well, no, wait, hang allegedly on. But what sort of breeders are they?
Hang on. You haven't let me finish what I was going to say. The kind of breeders who have led to the controversies that have seen the BBC dropping Crufts from being televised, that have led to parliamentary commissions of investigation in the UK that have given very, very serious concern or raised serious concerns about the gene pool not being wide enough, and that all kinds of problems are being perpetuated by supposedly reputable breeders.
No. You see, the thing about the programme that you're talking about, the BBC programme, that was good TV, as all programmes are. This is a good programme too, Philip, by the way. Plenty of controversy here. But that's one programme. Now, if you take, for example, I went into... Somebody who buys a dog from me or from any of the people that I know who show dogs, most of the people that I know who show dogs are the very same as me. They bore you to tears with health checks, long records, generations and generations of pedigrees, you know, constantly poring over pedigrees, poring over health checks, getting the dogs checked. It costs money to do this. We don't make money out of it. We do it just because we like the dogs. Now, I went into Dundalk, into Boots Chemist during the year to buy a box of Nurofen tablets. I was asked about six questions. She asked me, what did I want them for? Had I used them before? Did I know how to use them? Did I know the health, the side effects of them, and so forth? That's taking responsibility. You ring me looking for a puppy, you'll get a list of questions. Somebody said who once I did sell a pup to about 6 years ago, he said to me, it was like trying to get gold bullion out of Fort Knox.
As it should be, and well done to you. But Rosemary,
Let me finish this point, Philip. The point I'm making about the pharmacy, it's the same thing then for some people, sending them down to the corner to Nidge and his like to buy their drugs down there and telling them, well, Nidge doesn't have the overheads and Nidge raises his drugs organically and you won't have the, you know, the side effects, you won't be asked any questions. Buy your drugs off Nidge. It's the same thing. And people are being naive and people are believing that if you go to some of these people who breed mutts and crossbreeds, then you're going to get a healthy dog. It is not the case. Do you realise?
But hang on a second, because this is an important point here as well. While everything that you have said is undoubtedly the case and people should stay well, well away from people who are just clearly breeding for money, amongst those who are breeding for the breed's sake and maintaining the breed standard, they are perpetuating things within that breed that, I'm thinking of, which breed is it again? It's King Charles.
Why don't I make the point?
Okay, that breed is, because the breed standard demands a small skull. It is has huge pain because its brain is literally too big for its skull. And that is something that is being maintained by the Kennel Club and the Breed Association, and it's cruelty, isn't it?
No, Philip. That's something you have obviously bought into the same story. Pedigree dogs exposed, that was their big deal about the Cavaliers. I don't breed Cavaliers. You would have to speak to a Cavalier expert on that one. But I can tell you one thing. I do know people who breed Cavaliers, and they take their breed standard very seriously. And they breed the same as anybody else who breeds seriously and ethically. They breed for health. Now, you'll always get one or two bad apples, which obviously pedigree dogs exposed dug deep until they found somebody that, you know, they alleged was doing all these things. But the vast majority of people are breeding for health and doing the best that they can to preserve the breeds that they love. Now, if we were racehorse breeders, nobody would turn a hair. Sit down with the Queen of England. She can go back through her records for generations and generations because she's breeding pedigree horses. But go down to Jim Bulger, he can do the same thing.
Now, well, the same problem exists in the racehorse world as well.
Well,
the gene pool has got very narrow.
Tell Jim Bulger that he can go down to, say, Clondalkin or Smithfield or wherever and pick up a nice black and white horse and breed it into his lines and he'll end up with healthier animals. He'll look at you up and down and he will laugh.
Rosemary, we have to take one more break. Stay with us, though.
I will do.
Emer, there is another side to staffies, you say, other than that which we were broadcasting yesterday.
Hi, Philip. Yes, I don't know if you saw the picture I sent Jane or not earlier on today.
We did. It's a remarkable picture. Tell everybody what's in it.
I have a lamb and I also have two Staffordshire Bull Terriers. And my first lamb was brought up with the two Staffordshire Bull Terriers in the kitchen of the house. And in the picture that you have, it's a lamb sitting beside one of my Staffies. And I just wanted to make the point that Staffies are not a bad breed. They are also a recognised breed by the Kennel Club, which pit bulls are not. And people seem to constantly confuse the two breeds with each other. I just wanted to make the point that they were also voted number one family pet in the UK. They are now in the top five because obviously with all the media they've been getting over the past couple of years, people have stopped buying them and that kind of thing. But they are fantastic with children and they are also fantastic with other animals, as you can see.
My greatest concern, frankly, looking at the picture, was that you had a lamb on your sofa. Not that the lamb was in any imminent danger from the staffie, who looked absolutely perfectly content to be with it. But the point is still well made by vets, by animal behaviourists and so on, that you just never know, Emer. You can never be 100% sure, can you?
Well, it's the same with any dog.
With any dog.
And with any owner, Philip. Sorry, Emer, for cutting in on you. But really,
no, okay.
It's to do with the owner. Emer sounds like she knows what she's doing. She sounds like she has a lovely, lovely animal, a lovely pet. But you'll meet some people who just want their staffies to have a big muzzle on it and to have a big harness on it and march it down the street on the end of a chain. Who can legislate for that person? It's nothing to do with the dog. Emer's right. There's nothing wrong with the staffies as a breed. It's the people who own them.
I just want to make the point as well that my two staffies are rescued. And the staffie in the picture, he definitely...
Rescued at what age, Emer?
He was one when we got him.
You're taking a bit of a risk, aren't you? Because you just don't know what's been going on in that poor dog's history before it came to you.
Well, look, you know, you can't judge a book by its cover. And as long as all the correct assessments are done on a dog, what's the harm? I mean, as long as he's neutered... I think every dog that's rescued must be neutered. I also think Rosemary sounds like a very responsible breeder. And
she does indeed.
I'm not alone
in
that.
And I didn't say you were alone. Never said you were alone at all, Rosemary. You do sound like the very, very, very epitome of a conscientious breeder. All right, ladies, thank you very much. That is all that we have time for, Rosemary and Emer and everybody else. Thank you very much for listening. Kira Murphy was on sound. Shea Byrne is presenting The Mooney Show next until the same time tomorrow. Good afternoon. Thanks for listening.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.